This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
You are listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. Thank you so much for tuning in on my flagship station. I got to mention them, WPHT 1210. It is the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia, crossing most of the mid-Atlantic states. Now, a report came out this week stating that the average home buyer in America is now 40 years old. Think about that for a moment. The average person who is walking in purchasing their first home is now 40 years old. That is up from 1980, just to give you guys some context, from their late 20s. So back in 1980, the average person going in to purchase their home for the first time was in their late 20s. So not only are we talking about, think about from late 20s to your 40s, that's, I'm gonna just round it up and say about 20 years of equity that is just gone. And as most of you know, most Americans, our number one asset, our number one way of creating wealth is in the purchase of our home. So imagine that's 20 years of wealth and equity that has just vanished. So now you're 40. So you have missed 20 years of growth in your wealth. So that means your future is a little bit dimmer because you just missed out on 20 years of growth in your wealth. But not only for the 40-year-old who is walking in and purchasing a home for the first time, what that also means is that most young people in America will never own a home. And I've talked a lot about this on this show, is that we are actively becoming a nation of rulers and serfs, the haves and the have-nots. And because all we ever talk about in our country, in the political circles now, are the poor, poor, poor people or the top 1%. Name the last time anyone has ever talked about the middle class. And I'm going to keep talking about it because the middle class is important in any society that is healthy, that is thriving, that is happy, that is producing the kinds of results as a nation that you want. So what happens when the average person who is now purchasing a home is 40 and not 20? And this isn't, you know, 100 years ago. This is in the early 1980s. What is shifting in our country? And let me tell you, Venezuela did not become Venezuela overnight. It started with promises, a whole lot of promises that focused on the needs of the people. And right now in our country, life has become a little unaffordable. And this week, America voted. I believe they voted based on that, these promises. Life has become a little bit more unaffordable. And now enter Mamdani, stage left, talking about free everything. And I've said it before, I say it again, people will trade in freedom every time for some freebies. And in America, we have a lot of talking heads. A lot of people talking about socialism, communism, who have never lived under either. And that's why I'm so excited to bring in my guest, Daniel DiMartino. Hello, Daniel. How are you?
Very good. And you, Kathy? Thank you for having me.
I am so excited to have this because you're going to help us, by the grace of God, define some terms, because I throw around the word communist and socialist. And Steve Bannon, I was watching him last night, and he was calling Mamdani Bolshevik, Marxist, jihadist, a lot of terms, a lot of labels. I am hoping you can kind of bring some clarity to these definitions. But let me tell you guys who Daniel is. Daniel DiMartino is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a PhD candidate in economics at Columbia University. His research focuses on immigration, especially selection, assimilation, and highly skilled immigration. I'm going to bring you back, Daniel, when we're talking about these H-1B visas. But Daniel was born and raised in Venezuela. He experienced the terrible consequences of socialism firsthand. And I want to, again, double click on that word socialism. I would have thought what Mondero is doing is more communism than socialism. So I'm going to double click on that with you in a moment, Daniel. But also, let me just round it up. He does all kinds of things. I first saw him on Fox News, but you are also, Daniel, and a board of advisors for YAF, Young America's Foundation, as well as you are a member of the New Jersey State Advisory Committee to the United States Commission on Civil Rights. And you spend a lot of time educating high school students on the evils of socialist regimes. I guess we can just start there and getting some clarity on these labels Americans like to throw around. What is Mamdani? Let's start there. Is Mamdani a socialist or a communist? Help me understand.
Let me say what socialism is.
Okay.
So socialism is, this is the Marxist definition by Karl Marx and his colleagues in that ideology. It is government ownership or control over the means of production. It means that the government takes over businesses. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that the government owns all the businesses. It's that spectrum, right? The more the government owns, the more socialist you are. On the one end, you have places like North Korea, where the government owns everything, right? Even your house, you know. The only thing maybe they don't own is the clothes you're wearing at the moment. And on the other extreme, perhaps you have the most capitalist places in the world, such as Switzerland or Singapore or Dubai, you know, where taxes are very low, regulation is much lower, but there is still a government. Otherwise, it's anarchy, right? Not really capitalism. Communism is what Karl Marx thought would come after socialism. Communism is this system where there is no government, where people voluntarily share the product of their labor for free without any sort of self-interest, but putting strangers ahead of themselves and their families. Of course, that has never happened and that will never happen. Have to be forced to give away everything they work for. Otherwise, they don't give it away. And so what we have seen in practice worldwide is socialist governments. We have seen it in the USSR, which is actually called the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. You see it in Cuba, you see it in Venezuela, you see it in China during Mao. And Mamdani, based on what he supports, which he has literally said, ceasing the means of production is what he supports, Mamdani is a classist socialist of the Marxist kind. He would have been very comfortable just aligning himself with Marx and with the Soviets.
Now, but when I study and I went back and I just to double check in my history book, Lenin also considered himself a democratic socialist. And we saw that he ended up killing roughly 3 to 5 million of his own people, right? And then I looked at Mamdani, one of his websites, and he calls himself also a democratic socialist. So I'm, you know, again, it's all these labels, but what it sounds to me is that you have certain people in the world who believes they are different from everyone else who has come and have tried socialism, communism, but this time is different. We're going to do different. And so I'm not sure. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I want to pick up on that thought. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. And I have my special guest, Daniel DiMartino, in with me, kind of breaking all of this down. See you.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
Hello, everyone. You are back. You're listening to Kathy Barnett on The Kathy Barnett Show. And I have my... hopefully, who will become a good friend of mine, Daniel DiMartino, so young, but so brilliant. And I'm out here on his Twitter page right now. You can find him at Daniel DiMartino on Twitter. And I'm looking at a post that you tweeted last year. I guess we were talking about this same thing, Venezuela timeline. And there was a time when Venezuela was the fourth richest country in the world. It was thriving. It was wealthy. It was healthy. Then came the time when the people voted for, I call it communism. I don't know. Like communism just seems more forceful, more violent in order to take it. But it wasn't always what we see today with 7 million of his people fleeing from there, trying to find refuge everywhere else. Help us understand, you know, through the lens of Venezuela, you living there, you fleeing there yourself, through that lens, where is America on the Venezuela timeline?
Well, I wouldn't say that we're going to become like Venezuela. I'm very hopeful about America. I think other countries might become like Venezuela before we do. I mean, America has just a much stronger constitution, a much stronger tradition of liberty among its population, and has a Second Amendment, for example, that where things do get as bad as Venezuela, things would be very different, resisting tyranny. So I wouldn't say that we're going to become there, but I do worry that the same people that destroyed Venezuela are the same people deceiving Americans into voting for socialism and the socialist policies that destroyed us. Even though I think we're going to win the fight, I think that they want to turn us into Venezuela. So people like AOC, like Bernie Sanders, like Mamdani, that have praised what Maduro and Chavez did. Mamdani himself, by the way, you mentioned him earlier, he has a tweet from 2013 saying that the election protocol in Venezuela is not so shabby. The elections are rigged in Venezuela, Kathy. If you think that the election protocol is not so shabby, it's because you want to rig them.
Well, let's double click on some of that. And let's talk about some of the patterns that existed in Venezuela that you see some of the breadcrumbs. I am encouraged to know that someone fleeing from, I don't know, I still just want to call it communist. It just feels like communism. But nonetheless, someone fleeing from Venezuela, what are some of the patterns you can point to today here in America that existed in Venezuela before it was toppled and taken over?
I think the main thing is the motivating factors for voting for socialism.
Okay, and what are those?
So the real question is, why did Venezuelans vote for Hugo Chavez in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who would take away from the rich, supposedly to give to the poor, right? And I think that the main reason in Venezuela was that the Venezuelan economy had stagnated. Mm. And Venezuelans were unhappy about the direction of the country because of that. And what I see today in America is similar to why Mamdani won in New York City. Housing costs, and you were saying this in your introduction, are really eating up people. Housing has become much more expensive relative to our incomes. And that is a simple supply and demand problem, right? We just don't build enough housing in this country. And as a consequence, young people are really suffering at the expense of older homeowners, right? Because if you're a homeowner and home prices are going up, you're getting rich.
Yeah.
And the young people are falling behind. And that's why I think the young people are the ones voting for these kinds of things, because they are dissatisfied with the status quo. It's the opposite of Argentina with Milei. Milei in Argentina, the free market president who really revolutionized everything and is changing things for the better, he won because of the youth vote, because the youth was tired of the socialist policies. But because socialism is not a status quo, the youth is rebelling against the status quo, and Mamdani is offering them that alternative.
You know, there was a five-borough survey that came out, and it's very clear what the people in the five boroughs, what the needs are. And the top three won't come to a surprise for any of us, but it was the cost of housing was number one, the cost of food was number two, and then the cost of public transportation. And I looked at the average cost of the MTA there in Manhattan, and it's $2.90. And it weighs on me that we have a segment of our population who are willing to dabble around with trading in freedoms for $2.90 bus fare.
Yeah. Transportation is not the problem, the cost of transportation.
But that was one of the freebies that Mamdani talked about routinely, is giving free bus tickets.
Yes, especially given that buses are not the main way people even use. The subway is much more used, and other methods of transportation are. But I think that even the cost of groceries, I mean, food has gotten relatively cheaper relative to our incomes over time. Like over the last several decades, Americans spend a record low share of their income on food today. Housing is another story. So I do think that because housing has become so much more expensive, everything else feels more expensive, okay. Right? When somebody's paying, I mean, the median rent in New York City is $4,000. $4,000 a month. That is $48,000 a year. Some people make that as an average wage in America. And that is what people pay on rent on average in New York City. Now, some of these are like several people living in one apartment, but still they live in several people in one apartment because it's so expensive. Yeah. And, you know, I even moved out of New York City into Jersey because of the cost of rent. So I totally sympathize with this. Another thing that is very much understated is that a lot of this is because of taxes, too. New York City has very high taxes on everyone. Remember, if you live in the five boroughs, you pay an additional city tax of over 3% of your income. New York State has one of the highest income taxes in the nation. And then there's an 8.8% sales tax, which is also higher than states without an income tax like Florida and Texas. They don't have an 8.8% sales tax. So it's the weight of big government crushing us. That's what weighing us down. And we need politicians who can take that message to the youth and to everyone else so that they don't vote for an even greater weight of big government upon their shoulders.
How do we interpret then what we just experienced in this week's election? So you have Zohran Mamdani winning mayor in New York City. You have, I'm sure you probably saw this, Georgia Public Service Commission, which is an entity that is unique to Georgia, but it was resoundingly held by Republicans. It is since flipped. These people are in charge of utilities prices, and those two seats have now flipped. California Proposition 50 passed. Texas voters did approve a constitutional amendment to require U.S. citizens, people to prove their citizenship. However, that was balanced or countered by Maine voting for the complete opposite. Now, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is telling the nation yesterday, this week, that, listen, there's nothing to worry about. It's just blue states being blue, voting blue, red states voting red. Everything is okay. We are winning. It doesn't feel like winning what we saw this week with the voting. Yeah. And certainly the people are not feel. I think the people are telling us something. I think we brush it off to our peril as a nation. So what, as you look and assess what just happened this week, what is your assessment?
Well, several things. I think New York City is exceptional in that the victory of Mamdani isn't just about these economic reasons. It's also that his opposition was really bad. I mean, he was running against Andrew Cuomo. If he had been running against, say, I don't know, Representative Richie Torres, right, who's a much more moderate Democrat who doesn't have a corrupt, scandalous past, then I think he would have been much harder and perhaps actually Mamdani would have lost or not even won the primary, right? And so that's on the one hand. In Jersey and Virginia, I think that that's much more concerning. Virginia has some greater pattern of voting for Democrats, I would say now. But, you know, President Trump had made great gains in Jersey, and then the polls really underestimated Democrats in both states. It was thought to be a close race, and then they won by over 10 points each. So I think that, you know, you have to understand, every time there's an incumbent president, he tends to lose the elections holding his presidency. So this is a normal American pattern. On the other hand, the Jersey and Virginia Democratic candidates were much more moderate. They were not socialists. We might not like them, but they weren't crazies, I would say. Much more concerning is the victory for the attorney general in Virginia, who was somebody who was crazy, who was desiring death, killing children of his Republican opponents, and yet people did still vote straight party line for him.
So what is that telling you? Like, what is that telling you if you're looking at the timeline of Venezuela, the toppling of Venezuela from what it was, the fourth richest country, thriving, healthy, and productive, to where it is today, people fleeing from there, and then many Americans are waking up this week, and we're now comparing America to the timeline of Venezuela and what is coming for this nation. What does that tell you? Because in New Jersey, as well as Virginia, there was every single county shifted significantly towards the left. The left has lost their mind. So what is it that we're missing? Because I'm not feeling comfortable with what the Speaker of the House is saying. Don't worry about it. We're still winning.
Yeah, well, I think a couple things. One, I think that the national economy is not doing very well. And part of that has to do actually with the trade war that the U.S. government is dealing with other countries, other tariffs against us that have increased the cost of many goods and that have reduced job growth. I mean, job growth is really sluggish right now. We have lost many manufacturing jobs, in fact, since April. So I think that's part of the story. I think the other part of the story is simply backlash against the incumbent president, which tends to happen. And that Republican candidates weren't as good campaigning, too. So I'm not as worried. I would say that on the Venezuela timeline, my great concern is that with Mamdani winning, many more socialists are going to win primaries in the Democratic Party nationwide. And then the economy is going to stagnate.
Yeah. Okay, listen, guys, we're coming back on the other side. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show with my guest, Daniel DeMartino. See you guys in a few moments.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Hello, everyone. We are back. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show, and I have Daniel DeMartino with me. He is a fellow at Manhattan Institute and a PhD candidate in economics at Columbia University. And he was born and raised in Venezuela and fled Venezuela when Maduro came into power because of some of the things we are now talking about in our culture after this week's election. There's a lot of people comparing America to Venezuela, America to a socialist country, to communism coming in and taking over. And so instead of talking to someone who peeked at a spreadsheet and now they walk in front of the camera and act like subject matter experts, I thought I would actually go and get a subject matter expert. And that is why I invited Daniel DeMartino to come on as someone who understands the dangers and the failed promises. We were talking during the break, Daniel, of articles that I read and that I incorporated in my book, Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain. You can get that anywhere books are sold. But, you know, I incorporated some of the stories, again, because it weighs on me that here we have Venezuela, a very wealthy country, the fourth wealthiest country in the world. And now, after Maduro takes over, I'm watching women, stories about women selling their bodies for bread, for toiletries. I'm looking at, there were images of young people with long numbers written out on their arm, and these numbers were coincide with their number for being in the food bank line. I read a story about the number of zoo animals that were declining because people were now jumping the fences at zoos and killing the animals and eating them. Like, how do you go from the fourth wealthiest country in the world, thriving, beautiful, free, to now killing Bambi or whatever the equivalent of the animal may be in the zoo?
No, look, that happened in the zoo I used to go to when I was a kid. And in reality, it's a very humane solution because the animals were starving because the zoos were not going to buy food for animals when people, you know, when there's no profit, right? And so what are you going to do to the animals? Let them starve? No, it's better to kill them and eat them.
Wow.
That people need. And so they did it with the camels, for example. We had camels. And it's not like you can release the camel and the camel will live in a normal life in Venezuela. That's not their natural environment. So you get camel meat, which supposedly they eat in the Middle East too, because that's where the camels are from. So this really happens. And it's really a shame. And you're absolutely right. It went from the fourth richest to one of the poorest in the world. And that is why socialism is so negative. What do I mean by that? Chavez took over people's businesses. And so they all went bankrupt, right? The business that he didn't take over, he told the business owners how much they could charge for a product. And so there was no profit motive. You couldn't profit from selling something. So there was a big shortage. And then they give a lot of things for free. Food, water, electricity, gasoline, housing, cars. You know,
free.
Exactly. And the money had to come from somewhere. And because of that, they just printed it and they caused inflation. And they also stopped doing the maintenance required to the electric grid, to the water plumbing system. And so we had blackouts and big water outages. And so that's why I didn't have water in my apartment for many days straight. That's why I had blackouts almost every day by the time I left. And
sounds like California.
Yeah, I mean, everything that they made free is something that disappeared. And so that is the danger here, right? That we're making all these things free in America and we're bankrupting ourselves in the process. And that's going to cause an economic crisis that's going to leave us jobless with high inflation and ultimately lead to the kind of disaster that Venezuela suffered.
But how do you get there? Because I'm watching Americans. I mean, and I mean, I am smart. I will give myself a tremendous amount of credit for that. I am mostly self-taught, but I have a variety of degrees as well. You're a very intelligent young man. But the things we're talking about, connecting the dots between everything, you know, free ain't free. Someone has to pay for it. And you can look at our own hemisphere at Venezuela and say, okay, well, that didn't work out so well for them. This isn't brain. This isn't rocket science. This isn't, you know, neuroscience. You don't need to be an incredibly intelligent person to be able to connect these dots. And yet we have Americans who are voting for this and they're saying, yeah, I want this to our detriment.
I think the reason is that a lot of them believe that what happened to Venezuela only happened because we had a corrupt government that implemented it. When the reality is that every government has corrupt people.
Because we're corrupt as people. No one is perfect.
Of course. But the thing is, you cannot have government corruption if the government isn't in charge of the economy. Right? I mean, how are they going to steal it if they don't have it in the first place?
What do you mean?
And so government ownership over businesses allows the government to steal from the business. How could Maduro and Chavez have stolen the oil money if the government didn't own the oil industry in the first place? Right? How much corruption do you think there will be in the government grocery stores Mamdani makes? Who is he going to give the management to? Who's going to source the contracting and the food from? Those decisions have to be made. And who's going to make them? The politicians.
Well, we're already looking at his transition team, a bunch of socialists.
Including Lina Khan, by the way, who worked in Biden's FTC, a big socialist who wants the government to be involved in a lot of businesses. So that is my concern is that a lot of people think that this only happened to Venezuela because, you know, there's corruption. Well, if it happened in America, there would be corruption, too. And even if people were saints, if the politicians were saints, we already have government industries in America, Kathy. USPS. Yes. USPS lost $10 billion last year. Who paid for the $10 billion loss of USPS? The taxpayer, Congress.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, the taxpayer.
What about the VA, the Veterans Administration? We give government health care to the most deserving people in America, the veterans, and they get the worst service. Think about the people who do live under socialism in America, the Indians in the reservations. They don't have full private property rights over their houses. They get government hospitals, they get government schools, and they have the worst economic and social outcomes of any group in the United States.
So why are we begging for it? I mean, like, is this just a marketing issue? Republicans need to do a better job telling our story, telling people to wake up out of your slumber. Like, why do they hate Donald Trump so much? Why are they willing to destroy themselves, cut off their own nose despite their face? Why are they willing to do this? Don't they understand? Is it just a marketing issue that we need to do a better job in telling all of our wins?
I think partly it is a marketing issue. Absolutely. Chavez partly won in Venezuela because he was very charismatic and his opposition was not. But I think the other part of the issue is that on the right, we have not addressed a lot of the economic concerns of the general population, among them housing, right? Among them, the cost of living in general. And I think that we need to, you know, things like permitting reform that I think have now come more to the scene, things like zoning reform, you know, that would make electricity and housing cheaper, both respectively. So things like that, I think we need to talk more about. Licenses that make it impossible for people to get a job, right? You need a license for everything nowadays, that you shouldn't really require it. So we need to get the government off people's backs instead of just talking, right? So we need to do both marketing and policy.
What are the demographics that voted in? I still want to say communism, but okay, so Venezuela, it is now a socialist country. Is that what it's called? Yes. So technically, it's socialist, not communist. Is communist a form of government, or is it like I'm kind of like the Bolsheviks? Like they were more of the muscles.
Yeah, no,
of communism, socialism.
Communism, remember, it's just the stage after socialism where there is no government and people voluntarily share everything. That has never happened.
So that never happens.
Yeah, that never happens.
So what is China?
The American colonies tried it. Remember. In Jamestown, and they almost starved to death because they had collective land, and then they had to actually go back to private property. I mean, people have tried this for centuries. This didn't start in the Soviet Union.
I know, it's Maslow hierarchy of needs. Like we're all out here searching. So what is China? Because I would consider China a communist country.
So China was very much a socialist economy under Mao. That is up until the 70s, and people were starving. The largest genocide or mass death event in human history was during the Great Leap Forward of Mao Zedong, where 60 million people died. Think about that, 60 million people, more than the world wars, because China's population is just so massive.
Right.
And so after the 70s, when Deng Xiaoping, the successor of Mao, came to power, he liberalized the economy. So China is still pretty state interventionist and very socialist, but much less than it used to be, so people don't starve anymore.
Mm, okay. Okay, guys. So really great defining these words. Listen, we're going to take a break in a minute. We have 45 seconds. Can you tell me quickly, like, what are the demographics who vote communism, socialism in?
So I think it's different in every country. In Venezuela, it was really the poor. But in New York City, what we saw was actually the highly educated and the young, especially young men, especially women. 84% of young women voted for Mamdani.
When we come back, let's double click on that real quick. Why would the wealthy and the young and the educated vote for socialism? We'll be right back.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Listening to the Kathy Barnett Show, and I have Daniel DiMartino on with me. He is a fellow at the Manhattan Institute and a PhD candidate in economics at Columbia University. Very young man, but very accomplished. I mean, you have lived about five lives in your little young life. I don't even know how. I mean, you look so young, so I won't even ask how old.
I'm 26.
You're 26. See, only a 26-year-old would volunteer that information. So that is wonderful. Someone my age would never volunteer her age. But nonetheless, let's get back to this. We left the previous segment talking about, you know, the demographics of those who voted in communism. Again, as you rightly stated, the early reads on who voted for Mamdani, he got a very strong lift from younger college-educated voters. He won four of the five boroughs. Wow. So this is not just something, you know, just isolated incidents. This is something that is very prevalent. That's the reason why I don't believe. I'm not falling in line with what Speaker Mike Johnson and many political consultants are telling us, which is don't worry. It's just red being blue states being blue. I think there's something here. I think there's something we need to take some time out and suss out and see what can we learn from this? So let me pivot to you. What can we learn from these young, college educated, mostly wealthy people voting for socialism? What can we learn?
I think that Congress really needs to put their pants and stop the subsidization or the indoctrination of America. And that is what's happening now with the college system. That is what's happening in most elite colleges in America. And it's not that all young college-educated people are socialists, but I do think that those who are tend to move to New York City too. But the education system is really contributing to this. And Congress allowed this, right? And the presidency too. We have federal student loans that we shouldn't really have. That not only have contributed to the high cost of college, but also contributed to the indoctrination of Americans into this. So I think that that's really the main driving force that we have been hammering. In fact, even since high school, left-wing activists have been hammering into the minds of young people in America that you're being oppressed. It's all because of the white men. It's all because of the rich. It's all because of all these things. And in reality, that's not what's happening,
right? And you are a Hispanic man. I can call you Hispanic, right? I know that. Oh, okay, yes. Hispanic man. Well, you never know nowadays. You gotta ask. But and I'm a
no Latinx.
Oh yes, I know, right? Like they were really trying to force that. I was like, I know a lot of Hispanics, and I've never heard any one of them say Latinx or you know, or even you know, a black and brown. I've never heard black and brown, right? I'm a black woman. You're a Hispanic young man, and we're both sitting here saying we are not oppressed. This is the freest of nations I've ever lived in. I'm assuming you would say the same thing coming from Venezuela. And yet we have a bunch of young, white, rich, educated people running around talking about I'm so oppressed. Oppression is everywhere. And I agree with you. It is that we have to stop the subsidizing. We have to stop subsidizing the indoctrination of our young people. That's what you said. Yes. I love that.
I'll say also, you know, the other big part of the base of Mamdani, if you see the demographics, it's really Muslim voters within New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a whole other conversation, but those are really the groups, young college educated and Muslim voters that really, if you see by religion, actually it's fascinating, the demographics in the exit poll of NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Mamdani lost all religious groups except the atheists and the Islamists and the Islamists.
Right. And the Jews came out for him.
No, the Jews came out for Cuomo.
Oh, no. Well, it's something I saw said that there were a large number of Jews actually voted for him. Jews,
but that's similar to Catholics and Protestants that voted.
A third of Jews.
Protestants voted for Mamdani at a higher rate than Jews and Catholics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Look at that. Right. You know what? And that's why when I looked at, you know, your resume and your focus is on immigration, especially selection. Especially assimilation, especially highly skilled immigration. So these are all the buzzwords that will get you canceled as a Hispanic man fleeing from Venezuela. I don't know if you know that, right? Because you're not supposed to select. Any and everybody should come over. You're not supposed to try to assimilate. Nope. I mean, I think our government actually hired people to make special foods for those who came into our country illegally, right?
They make the voting materials in different languages when you're supposed to speak English.
How about that, right? I mean, so again, these are just common sense. And I think if we're looking for a way to save our country so that we don't become a Venezuela, I know you say we're not close to that. I don't know. I believe these people will do a little bit of anything. They will vote themselves right back into slavery. But what do we do? And I think a large part of that is we have to start focusing on what is true, and we have to have the courage to stand up in the middle of Times Square, in the middle of the market of ideas, and say, a boy is a boy and never will he be a girl. We don't want certain groups of people, certain religions to become too large, to take too much of a majority in our country, because with that comes certain ideologies and behaviors.
Absolutely. No, I absolutely agree. I do think that it is not about the color of people or even where they come from. I think it's about their particular characteristics. You know, like there are a lot of Iranians who oppose the Iranian regime, who are really smart people, who are dissidents of the regime. You want those. You don't want the people who support the Iranian regime. Right?
Yes.
I mean, this is really common sense. Same with Venezuelans, right? You don't want people who are members of Tren de Aragua. Same with people from everywhere, right? There's good and bad people in every country.
But hey, he's just a Maryland dad. He's a New Jersey dad, right?
right.
Like, don't even.
The one who beat up his wife.
Yes, you know.
And
was trafficking people across the nation. No, he's a Maryland dad.
Right. So I think that better selecting immigrants, you know, people who are more highly educated, who speak English, who are younger, rather than, and then that really work and earn enough income to not depend on the state.
Yes.
Right? Because it's a big financial burden to bring in people who depend on the
state. I agree. Okay. Last conversation. Heritage Foundation. When I saw Kevin Roberts' video, my first thought was, here go Republicans doing self-inflicted wounds. We do unforced errors. And yet there he was being very, you know, you know, beating of the chest, only to now walk it all back and say it was a mistake. I don't know if it was a mistake or not a mistake. The thing that I'm thinking that is the Republican Party or our conservative institutions capable to lead our nation away from the edge of socialism? That was my thought, not whether or not he should have said it, shouldn't have said it, whatever the case may be, walking it back, all the blowback and all the nuances that go with it. My question is, do we have institutions, conservative institutions, and a conservative party that is capable of doing what is needed to lead people away from voting in more Mamdani's? I'm going to give my remaining moments to you.
That is such a good point, to focus on winning, right? But I think in addition to focusing on winning, then you have to stand for something. Mm. And just like I think in the left, there is a war for what they stand for between the Mamdanis and the more moderate Democrats. I do see with concern on the right, especially among young guys like me, who increasingly support really anti-Semitism, Kathy. Mm-hmm. And who support really, you know, even big government and other bad things. And I think that it is up to conservative institutions and thought leaders to guide people in a more positive direction. And, you know, so I think that the whole scandal, I mean, the whole thing with Heritage was all unnecessary, all because that, I mean, the first video was all unnecessary. But I do worry about the influence that Tucker and his show is having, to be honest. You know, on World War II, relitigating World War II. I mean, the whole thing with, you know, Fuentes and anti-Semitism and a host of other things. Even, you know, more recently, I mean, Tucker even said that, why do we even oppose the Maduro regime? Like, you know, things like that. Are you really a conservative? It doesn't sound like that to me.
But what about do we have, in your opinion, because Maduro would not have taken over and done the things that he's done if we had at the time, if you had at the time leaders who were capable of communicating what is real, what is not real, leaders that once in power did what was necessary. Do you agree that Republican Senate should do away with the filibuster? Do we have the leadership to do what is necessary to save America?
No, I don't think that we should do away with the filibuster. I think it's going to bite us in the back as soon as the president's term is over. I mean, what are the Democrats going to do if the filibuster is over, Kathy? They are going to admit D.C. as a state.
I think they're going to do it anyway. They're going to do it anyway.
Well, they haven't done it. They could have done it under Biden, and they didn't.
True.
They are going to pass full amnesty for all illegal immigrants.
I think they're
going
to do it. I think they're rabid enough at this point. I think they've taken off their mask.
I honestly think they won't.
Okay.
But, you know, if they were to do it, then Republicans will come back. I guess that's the fear, right? We're in like a nuclear cold war between the parties where, you know, who's gonna press the button first and unleash everything on the other? And maybe that's the only way to win. And I fear that because I fear that the country is gonna be much worse off if that happens.
But what happens if what we saw this election repeats itself in the midterms, and now Democrats win the majority in the House or the Senate, and now we get nothing done, nothing improves with the economy?
That's how the founders designed the system. It's for the gridlock. In fact, the founders wanted gridlock. It's better when the government doesn't pass new laws, but then we have to win the hearts and minds.
I agree.
Cannot say, because we can't win the hearts and minds, I'm going to do away with everything, right?
I love that.
And I think we can win the hearts and minds. I mean, look what we passed. President Trump passed the OBB, the greatest border bill, tax cuts, so many things passed that were very successful. On the regulatory side, he's doing a lot. On the foreign policy side, he's doing a lot. So I do see that this presidency has been successful so far.
Apparently, the people aren't reading it that way.
Well, I did mention the tariffs have been a problem of the economy.
Okay. Daniel, I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Kathy, for the opportunity. And I love our Kathy conversation.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. Okay, guys, listen, you've been listening to the Kathy Barnett Show. I am Kathy Barnett. And my flagship station is WPHT 1210, the number one talk radio station in Philadelphia and all of Pennsylvania. Let's just be honest. Thank you. See you next week. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.